There's just one usually that smells.
Is it Stav's?
Well, Stav, I don't even want to tell you, but he does like a bit where he farts into the mic. So that's.
No, it doesn't smell like that. It smells like kind of like dog's drool, which is like probably his spittle when he like laughs.
We'll have him on to talk about body acceptance.
He's our body positive correspondent.
Episode 12.
Yeah, wow. We're in the teens now. We're a bunch of hot teens now.
Anna, congratulations on your I-24 appearance yesterday.
That's right, guys. I went on Israeli television.
Shout out to Philip, friend of the pod.
Oh yeah.
Who has orchestrated many of the Cumtown adjacent appearances on the Israeli 24-hour
orchestrating my disgrace. Somebody on Instagram was like, wow, do they just like let everybody onto this channel? And I fired back, unlike Israel, the country. Felt really good about that, making that take. But apparently they won't book Nick Mullen, our friend of the pod, because he's too much of a bad boy.
He'll make it on one day. Yeah. They're just waiting for the right topic.
Yeah.
When they take on ironic racism, he'll be the first.
Yeah. When they take on, can white people say the N-word with an A? Oh God.
But they had you on to talk about Anna Delvey.
Yeah. The Soho grifter.
To lend some insights onto why people in the art world are so scammable.
Yeah, I legitimately had no idea what they were talking about.
They asked you if Supreme hoodies were avant-garde.
Avant-garde, yeah. They didn't know what we were like speaking two different languages.
Well, you looked cute. And the screenshots are excellent because they make it look like you're a con artist.
Yeah, it's like, you know, local con artist busted for fraudulent activities. Pretends to be like German heiress. I was like, that's me. Yeah, anyway.
I think it was a success.
Yeah, this is my first televised appearance, so, you know.
It's a real era of scammers, ourselves included.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear Jill Stein hasn't used any of the recount money that was donated to her and has just been spending it?
Yeah.
The greatest grift of all.
Yeah.
She's not recounting anything except for her pile of money.
Jill Stein is the Anna Delvey of politics. Mm-hmm. She's like one of the most serious political grifters around. She just happens to be like fairly well preserved for her age and like seems fairly benign.
I know some people who voted for her.
Did you vote for her?
I didn't vote.
No. Oh, okay.
Good for you, Dasha.
But I might have, you know. Just to be a bitch, just to not be with her.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyone but her.
I think I might have voted for Jill Stein to not be with her.
Oh, you did?
I really wish I could go on record and say that I voted for our Fuhrer, but I was too much of a coward at the time.
Well, I was scared that I would get in the voting booth and then just do it.
Yeah.
Like I would feel like the impulse would be too strong.
Instead you just didn't
so
go.
I just abstained, so
yeah. That's I'm proud of you, Dasha. To tell you the truth, I really hate voting and don't think that it's a valuable exercise. And I love when people don't vote.
Welcome
but my,
to our semi-political podcast.
But my mother said she would disown me if I didn't vote because she wanted me to do it for her. And then when she drove me to the polling station in New Jersey. And then when I got out, I lied and like I punked her and told her I voted for Trump. And she like got really angry.
Sorry, Olga.
Yeah. Another thing is that it's officially Pride Month.
Oh,
you guys.
Congrats, you lesbian.
Yeah. So it's time to
official gay mic.
It's time to drape yourself in a pride flag and put on your pussy snorkel mask and munch some rug.
I mentioned this to you ladies earlier, but I did have a erotic lesbian dream about Lala Kent from Vanderpump Rules last night. So doing my part.
Yeah. And I've been watching The L Word.
We're all killing it. We're all doing really good.
Yeah. I like to, you know, get my porn on TV rather than logging on to one of the sites.
Yeah, some higher production value.
Yeah.
A little more ambiguity.
Yeah.
Do you guys pay for porn?
No.
Well, our friend mentioned that he does, and he said it was the greatest thing that happened to him.
Who?
Who? Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
we won't say.
Yeah, yeah, we won't. Unnamed. He's a friend of the pod.
I am.
It just threw me off guard. I didn't know.
I was recently featured as a breakthrough nudecomer on MrSkin.com. Nudecomer. And they followed up with me to do an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yes, of course, I would love to. Can I have a free membership? And they said they would only give me one for the month.
What's the membership entail? Like,
it just costs
access?
Money. It's like access to their whole arc. They're like very extensive, lovingly curated archive of naked actresses.
Is that better or worse than what The Wing can do for us?
I was expecting lifetime membership, honestly.
Yeah, or a year would have been nice. I think a year would be reasonable,
but
yeah.
I mean, I'm going to do it anyway, obviously. I'm not going to pass that.
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah.
So they explain, like, what are the time stamps where they can see titties?
Yeah, basically. And screenshots, the whole thing. There's, like, whole video compilations of, like, I was watching one the other day on Mr. Skin of actresses who show their tits in scenes where they're, like, getting mammograms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can really, like, whatever you want to see, they have it. So that's my...
I feel like I sometimes encounter those kind of like vids on like Pornhub or X videos where it's like, you know, Kaylee Cuoco or like, what's her name? Like Shailene Woodley gets mammogram in this like Lifetime original movie.
I've fapped before to the rape scene in Bully.
I just watched that. I rewatched it recently.
I think Bijou Phillips is one of the hottest girls of all time. And that scene really does it for me, unfortunately. But yeah, you can access that for free.
Yeah.
This is like $5 a month. That's not bad. Oh, that's on discount.
So, speaking of people who are often nude and have sex tapes.
There you go.
Porn adjacent.
That's a good.
Great segue. Kim Kardashian met with President Trump.
She visited the White House on Wednesday
to talk about prison reform and sentencing.
Mm-hmm.
Like a huge LOL there. And a lot of people were like very shocked, not only that Kim was in the White House, but that especially so because Melania has been missing.
Melania, where is Melania?
I read that she has not been publicly spotted in the last 20 days, and I'm really dying to know what kind of work she's getting.
Exactly. That's exactly the point I was going to make.
She's getting her kidneys
is that
lifted.
People are, there's a lot of speculation, but I think that it's fairly obvious, unless something has gone terribly wrong, that she's gotten a facelift or something.
Yeah.
And she'll come back soon. I
wonder if she's getting a brain transplant.
She's trying to be best.
Yeah.
She's getting a lobotomy.
Yeah. That's like, yeah, the only good woman is a lobotomized woman. But there's a picture that's circulating of Kim and Trump in the Oval Office that made a lot of people, like a lot of people had the take that he was maybe replacing his like icy Slavic mail order bride with like everybody's favorite Middle Eastern termite queen. And of course, that's like very inaccurate because, you know, Trump being our first Jewish president loves them kind of like fair and tall and leggy. And
of
I don't
course,
think Kim's
like
his type.
Daughter.
Yeah, no. Exactly.
He said in a Howard Stern interview in like 2005, maybe even more recently, he said that he called her fat.
He called Kim Kardashian
fat. Yeah, he said she has a fat ass. And like if she wasn't Kim, no one would want to date her.
God, I miss that kind of like 80s man vibe where their idea of a hot woman was like athletic body and not like, you know, video girl. It was like the supermodel thing was the ideal back in the day.
A fat. Well, the sun will set on the age of the fat ass. Sorry.
Sorry, Meg. No, I will say I love a large caboose.
Of course. We all
know how I feel about Naomi Russell, but the Kim thing really freaks me out, because if you're gonna have a big ass, you have to have small titties to balance it out. You can't have everything. You can't have your cake and eat it too.
That Venus of Willendorf. Yeah, then style it just looks
terrifying in a Freudian way. It's like a Louise Bourgeois sculpture.
I was watching tennis yesterday, and Serena and Venus, they have terrifying asses.
They have huge asses, but they're like very trim on top, right?
Yeah. I mean, they are, but it's like the side profile is
insane.
Wow. Big. I personally feel like my butt is much more evergreen.
Yeah.
Like, your ass is amazing.
Yeah, it's not great. It's great. Also, Kim's ass is fake and it still manages to look bad.
Yeah.
That's my other big beef.
Yeah, like, her whole body is like engineered.
Giant ass.
Nicki Minaj's one. Her body freaks me the fuck out.
Her ass is fake.
It's definitely fake. Her thighs are fake. She's completely fake.
Yeah, no, it's truly terrifying. But as always, so cool. I loved Nomi Fry's gloss on it, which she wrote that the Oval Office looked newly gaudy and garish with those two inside it, and that it was almost like an updated American Gothic for the reality TV era.
Right.
And she called it a Boschian spectacle of horrors, which I also loved because that allusion to it was Bosch such a like,
good,
so good.
Yeah, it was. It really, for me, it hit this nice middle point, because people's initial reactions were so like, this is a sign of the end times, this like really histrionic kind of like, people were so upset. And then after Nomi published her piece, the backlash to that was like the inverse of people being like, it's actually no big deal that a business person would visit our president, which is like, no, it is a big deal. It's completely creepy. It's not like the worst thing, but it is the way that Nomi described it, as like, oh, we're still like trapped in this like late capitalist spectacle, as she called it. And it's like, that's what makes it significant, is that how it's so, it gives you such an uneasy feeling to see them
together. It was like legitimately creepy, and they're like so augmented but still somehow like decaying and gross. And I thought, like, I really like the whole allusion to Bosch, because it's one that like older Russian people would make. But I thought it was almost like more Bruegel-esque, like the parable of the blind leading the blind, you know? And like, I have no good takes in this department, but that's where I thought about this question of like idea of optics, and whether this was like a strategic ploy or whether it was just like the meaningless retardation of life under late capitalism.
It's hard to tell. I mean, I will say that I don't think that it's such a big deal that Kim is not an expert on prison reform, because it's like, if an expert on prison reform visited Trump, he wouldn't understand anything they said.
Yeah.
And it's not as if they would have some kind of like, be able to have some elevated discourse. It's like, Kim Kardashian is maybe the perfect person to.
Well, right. It's like, you know, a spectacle circle jerk. And like a symbolic circle jerk, but it's like, it's kind of similar to like Hillary Clinton, who was announced, I think today, that she was getting like an award from Harvard University for like, you know, excellence in female leadership, you know? And it's like, yeah, it's like hilarious. But my mother actually tweeted out a side by side picture of, Kim and Trump and
Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky.
Monica Lewinsky. Yeah. The similarities are staggering. I was like, Olga, come on, come down. but like,
I really enjoy Kim's fleeting moments of wokeness. Like, one of my favorite episodes of Kardashians is when she goes to Austria and is like harassed by this man in blackface.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, I finally understand what Kanye goes through. And then the episode concludes with her making a blog post about racism.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And the fat woman is harassing her for her baby. This woman is like on the plane and saying, oh, see that lady over there? She has a baby with a black man.
Wow.
It's a really intense episode.
Yeah, I remember that. And I remember there was a brief arc in last season where they had, let's see, I have some notes here. It reminded me of like kind of the woke direction that Keeping Up with mm-hmm. Kardashians took when they went to, there was like a homelessness episode where they toured LA Skid Row. And then immediately afterward, there was an abortion episode where they made a visit to Planned Parenthood.
Which one of them got an abortion?
Yeah, Chloe, her cheater husband.
Did we get a confirmation on truth or true?
No, we didn't. Okay. I think it's Tristan Thompson's baby with Chloe is named, True.
True.
True's cute.
Fake news. Yeah, I mean, they're all the Kardashian spawns are cute.
My friend Brooke tweeted this, I should say. True as in the rumors are true.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Kanye West released an album today, I guess we should also mention.
Yeah. Haven't listened yet, so
is this the one he took the album cover photo
for? The album
for?
Cover is like a picture he took of some mountains, then he scrawled, "I hate being bipolar, it's awesome" onto, which is such a Gemini thing to say. And people seem to be responding well. Adam was listening to it this morning, and then I listened to it a little bit when I was walking around, but mostly people are like over all of his MAGA stuff. And the album doesn't have any especially like political overtones. It's just sort of, I think Kanye's will end up being someone where we can like suspend our problem with his politics to enjoy his great.
Well, yeah.
Music.
I mean, I think that like Kanye has been a known Trump supporter for a while now, or like, you know, he's been flirting with it vaguely. And he met Trump back in December 2016, which fresh off of his like 8-day hospitalization for having a mental breakdown. They met at Trump Tower. And then he was photographed last month with those like record execs wearing his MAGA hat.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are like so mind-blowingly rich and so politically out of touch that I don't think they have any ideological convictions. So there's no. Like contradiction with them meeting Trump. Like I think for Kim it's about public relations because she understands that no press is bad press or there's no such thing as bad press. And then for Kanye I think it's about philosophy, not ideology. It's about aesthetics because he
completely
really is attracted to Trump's kind of bloviating bravado shtick because he has it himself. And it's like I've always took more issue with people like Charlie Sheen and Sean Penn who repudiate Trump because I'm like, you're exactly
him.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen repudiated Trump?
Yeah. And I was like, you get HIV from hookers and you're going to get on your soapbox about how Trump is like vulgar and bad and wrong?
Yeah. I feel like Trump borrowed winning from like that was Charlie Sheen's whole thing when he had that moment.
Yeah,
he was saying he was winning and had tiger's blood and stuff. Like, that's pure Trumpism.
Yeah.
And proto-Trumpism.
But Charlie Sheen turned on Trump because he originally was supporting him.
Oh, okay.
It was like him and like
then he changed
Ted Nugent,
mind.
Stephen Baldwin. Yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of like, yeah. It's only a matter of time before like Kid Rock turns on Trump. But yeah.
Oh, God, right. He does. Anyways.
Roseanne doesn't seem like she'll be turning on Trump anytime soon.
Yeah, speaking of people that are not getting off the hook, we have Roseanne and Samantha Bee.
Yeah.
For their loose lips.
Well, Roseanne is another one of these people who I personally think is an eccentric. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah.
Is an eccentric and is an artist. And you can have your doubts or your, you know, questions as to whether or not she's a good or bad artist. But she gets a pass by virtue of being an artist.
Right.
So the reboot of Roseanne was canceled after Roseanne Barr made a controversial tweet about former Obama aide Valerie Jarrett. And the tweet in question basically said that Jarrett was like if the Muslim Brotherhood and the Planet of the Apes mated, which is admittedly pretty dark and racist.
Racist, definitely.
The thing that I thought
was just a touch too far.
It's too far.
Because obviously we all know, of course we know she's been racist.
Mm.
Yeah.
As do the people who put Roseanne on air in the first place.
Yeah, I thought like one of the most comical things about this was that I Googled Valerie Jarrett immediately, and I was like, wait, Roseanne and Valerie actually look a lot alike. did anybody else have this reaction? They look very similar.
I'm gonna look her up right now.
But she Roseanne immediately deleted the tweet, and she issued the following apology. I apologize to Valerie Jarrett and to all Americans. I am truly sorry for making a bad joke about her politics and her looks. I should have known better. Forgive me. My joke was in bad taste. I am now leaving Twitter. And she blamed it later on Ambien.
Yeah. She said that
you know, I can attest from
it
like
it does seem like an Ambien-ish tweet because it doesn't make
I took a Ambien, ton of sense. Did a lot of fucked up weird stuff.
Like why? Like racist?
No,
stuff.
Just like went home at when I was like 19. Went home to my parents. My dad comes out at 3 a.m. I have all the gas burners in the kitchen on, all the cupboards open, the radio on.
Good
the
God.
Lights are on and I'm cutting an onion over a everything bagel with like knives everywhere. And I didn't recall it. And next day my dad's like, what the fuck were you doing?
Yeah.
And I was like, what? I don't know. And he's like, what are these pills you're on? And then they found out like
you
I was
on
getting
it for
them
your,
from
your narcolepsy.
Yeah. I was getting them for like my, from my student health center.
Oh.
And my parents like intervened. They were like, get her off this stuff. But that was before I had them before the recall. So they've been recalled. So they were like, they were reformulated.
Oh, okay.
But I think, mean, still think
but
you
I still
do
think
crazy
you do
stuff
weird
on
shit.
Them.
Wasn't
yeah,
there
yeah,
like
yeah.
a big sleep eating problem
yeah.
with Ambien?
Yeah,
people?
I can attest to having witnessed numerous like upstate wine moms under the influence of Ambien. I can attest to the fact that that shit makes you loopy. Like I took half a Klonopin the other day and like literally sent pictures
oh
of
my
butthole to like my accountant and my cousins in Israel. Like. I mean, like,
yeah.
drugs make you do crazy shit. I'm just
I was
kidding,
prescribed Klonopin for like 10 months.
Yeah.
Wait, sorry, what did you say?
I was prescribed Klonopin for like 10 months.
Did you take it every day?
Yeah, I took it every day and then I would drink and stuff on it. And yeah, I would say
it makes you do yeah.
wild shit.
But I will say it's funny how yeah. people blame their racism or sexism on being under the influence and of some or other substance. And
because
it's like,
you're just admitting it's like in your right below your consciousness
yeah,
anyway. Like, you're like, I am racist, but I wouldn't have said that.
Yeah, no, it's like you were a bigot to begin with. You're just mad that your like inhibitions were lowered enough that you tweeted yeah. it out to the public. It's not like Klonopin or whatever Ambien makes you racist. But yeah, so I guess basically like Wanda Sykes, who was a consulting producer on the Survival, terminated her association with them. And Sarah Gilbert, her lesbian co-star, condemned the remarks on Twitter. What I do find particularly repulsive in all of this is all these people who are associated with the production, like this guy, the showrunner Bruce Helford, mm-hmm. and the ABC president Shannon Dungey. They all sort of scrambled to clarify that no, like Roseanne's comments do not at all reflect the values of the network.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, it goes without saying that the network is not responsible for the views of like an eccentric celebrity throwback.
Right wing conspiracy theory.
Yeah, that you raised from the grave basically in your bid for relevance to like monetize like on the cultural climate that Trump has basically inaugurated. But it's like it was clearly a strategic decision, this revival of Roseanne would come now. It was a strategic decision.
And I think it was the third most, the best rated.
It was like the number one for ABC.
People apparently really loved it.
But it was always originally designed to capitalize on the cultural fallout of Trump.
The MAGA moment.
Yeah, of him like stoking racial animus in the country. And, you know, I thought that people were really up in arms when Roseanne basically was slated to play a Trump supporter on the show, which is an artistic decision. It's not like it's a fictional decision, not like
a
real one. Like it's irrelevant whether or not she is a Trump supporter. In real
right.
life.
That's like the reality she's depicting. Which
right. Because the character
much
Roseanne.
Of and which much of America
yeah,
falls into as well.
Yeah, and that character would of course be a Trump supporter. It would be accurate.
Yeah,
be plausible.
That's the updated Roseanne.
Yeah.
just like Al Bundy would also be
right.
A Trump
supporter. They should really bring that show back.
I would
back.
Love that.
Really identify with like Peg.
I found this Roseanne Barr quote, since this is officially the age of the grift. Mm-hmm. I'm going to share it with you guys. It's, the thing women have yet to learn is nobody gives you power. You just take it.
Beautiful.
Roseanne Barr.
I mean, there's something very, I find Roseanne to be very sympathetic on many levels because she's just so wacky.
Yeah. And, like,
she's funny.
Yeah.
And she
was really funny on Twitter during the election.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was hysterical.
She was a real darling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's also a person.
Now that
like,
she says stuff like Chelsea, Soros, Clinton, all of a sudden people have a problem with her.
But so right on the heels of this Roseanne scandal, Samantha Bee issued an apology. It was an absolutely smarmy, disgusting apologia to Ivanka Trump after she called her a feckless cunt mm-hmm. on her show, which like I wish somebody would call me a feckless cunt. And the apology reads, quote, I would like to sincerely apologize to Ivanka Trump and to my viewers for using an expletive on my show to describe her last night. It was inappropriate and inexcusable. I crossed Boo. A line and I deeply regret it. And I'm just like, you should apologize for like not ever being funny. That's what you really. Yeah.
We'll be waiting for that apology.
Yeah. But my thing is, like, if you're going to go for the jugular, you can never, ever, ever apologize.
Absolutely yeah. not.
It's really irrelevant whether you're in the right or whether your critics are in the right. You should never backpedal because the minute that you issue a public apology,
you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile.
Yeah.
I don't understand why it's a bad thing to call someone a cunt. I do it all the
Honestly,
time.
Honestly, yeah.
Like...
Well,
she's
yeah.
on cable. She's on TBS. Not on network TV.
It's if you do want to consider it a slur, you could make the argument that like it's one that women are allowed to say
yeah.
to one another.
Yeah. A slur. Like, well, give me a fucking break.
A lot yeah. of people on the conservative side, like in the conservative camp, got their panties in a bunch and they were like, well, if, you know, Roseanne gets her show canned, Samantha Bee deserves it, too. And I was like, no, this is like a totally false equivalence.
Right.
It's one thing for a woman to call another woman a cunt and mm-hmm. a powerful woman at that. It's another thing for a white person to call a black person an ape, basically.
Right. Yeah. Go after an entire group of people.
Yeah. This is like completely like not an equivalent argument. I would really truly like to see Samantha Bee dragged off air, but not for that reason, because it sets like a really bad precedent.
She should have never. I mean, it just speaks to her lack of integrity in general as a comic. Or a person
to apologize. But
yeah, of course she apologized just was the moment there was any pressure to, and you should never do that.
I mean, Jon Stewart would, I doubt he would ever do that. Bill Maher would never do that. Not that these are respectable people.
Well, Bill Maher wouldn't. But I think that in the liberal sphere, like the liberal entertainment circle, whatever, is really the only industry or like the segment of the industry where everybody like pats each other on the back for apologizing, and your career is only improved from apologizing. Like anywhere else, you get excommunicated.
Mm-hmm. Kanye never apologized.
Yeah.
And I think that has something to do with people now just enjoying his record.
Yeah. And I don't think Donald Trump apologizes and as an entertainer. Like, you know, let's not speak of his role as a politician, but as an entertainer, he is doing
the
smart thing. Yeah, the clever thing. But so let me ask you this, you guys, do you feel like it was warranted of ABC to like cancel Roseanne on the strength of her racist tweet?
No,
I think it's hypocritical that they, like we mentioned, like they knew that she was a racist the whole time. They like rebooted her show to capitalize on a racist moment.
Mm-hmm.
And now that like she said something like a toe over the line.
Yeah.
I think you could reprimand someone. That doesn't need to be.
They should have like replaced her with Melissa McCarthy
too. Yeah, like it's really.
Think about it. There's a whole crew of people that work on this show.
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't just lie on the back of her to like decide what happens.
Yeah.
I would be pretty upset.
And everybody, came into this knowing that this woman was like a loose cannon.
Maybe they should just get Lindy West to play Roseanne.
That'll make them happy.
She's a malignant cunt. Excuse me for saying so.
Another thing that happened last week is that Moses Farrow penned a personal essay on his blog defending Woody Allen against the molestation allegations made against him by Mia Farrow and Dylan, and as well as indicting Mia Farrow with abuse and basically brainwashing her kids to conspire against Mr. Allen. And Moses describes the sort of infamous narrative that Dylan's been perpetuating with the molestation in the attic and everything, and he describes being there being no train set in
attic. Was like the definitive, that was like the mic drop detail. Mm-hmm. That was like, holy shit,
there's not even like an attic that a kid would be allowed into.
Yeah, that was an interesting account, because not only did he deny the allegations, he also kind of clapped back at Mia.
Yep.
So it was as much a kind of like a bid to exculpate Woody as it was to indict Mia for
like a child abuser and a baby hoarder, as we've accused her of being before.
And then there was a report from Page Six that Woody Allen and Sunyi Previn's daughter also defended him. She's 19, and she has said that he was only ever loving and supportive with her, and that was never like pervy or creepy in any way. The fact is that nobody knows the full truth. Like, we, you know, Dasha and I have our suspicions,
right?
I just, like, based on like certain empirical and anecdotal evidence, my hunch is that Mia Farrow is like a really horrible, vindictive, manipulative,
psycho, confirmed psychopath.
Yeah. There was a story,
and a homewrecker in her own right.
Yeah. Wait. And because she
was like moved in with the Previns.
Oh, okay.
And then became pregnant with
and stole Andre from Dory.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then Dory was institutionalized.
Yeah, that's bleak.
After Mia Farrow was pregnant with
I have a bunch of stories. I'm going to go through all of them. There's a story how she was placed on kind of medical watch because she went on a hunger strike for Darfur, which is like kind of the best, the most innocent of it. From like the comfort of her like $1 million brownstone in like Brooklyn or the West Village or wherever.
Classic anorexia.
Yeah, it was just like an elaborate way of like politicizing her anorexia. And she wasn't that young. She had passed her prime at that point. This was when she was like in her 50s or something. Mm-hmm. Then there's a story told by super producer Robert Evans, who produced Love Story and The Godfather, along with Roman Polanski's two greatest masterpieces, Chinatown and Rosemary's Baby. And that story is from the set of Rosemary's Baby. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fairly well documented that when she was married to Frank Sinatra, he sent divorce papers to her on set while she was filming Rosemary's Baby, because he was like kind of an old school Italian dude who was uncomfortable with his wife being a working actress, let alone surpassing him professionally in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame him for that. But so, as Evans tells it, for a while, Mia hemmed and hawed because she didn't want to lose her man. And, you know, he was like her come up also, her daddy. And
many, many years her elder.
Yeah. And as Evans, being kind of like the slick talking, secretly Ashkenazi trouser snake that he was, he talked her up and he was like, you know, like, hey, baby, if you do the film, you're going to be a star. And like, at which point, like, a light bulb went off in her head, and she, it occurred to her that she didn't need Sinatra anymore to be famous. So like, while the main, gist of that story was that while Farrow was filming Rosemary's Baby, he was filming a movie called The Detective, and he allegedly wanted her to play his leading lady. And instead she went with the Rosemary's Baby role, which was probably, you know, astute, shrewd.
Right.
And the long story of it, or the short story of it, was that Rosemary's Baby became a hit and The Detective was a failure. But this is not the end of it, and I'll shut up after this. Mm-hmm. But according to Evans, she then asked him to have Paramount take a double page ad out in New York Times, Los Angeles Times, Variety, and The Hollywood Reporter, comparing the dual openings of their pictures in terms of box office dollars and critical acclaim.
Petty wars.
Yeah, and he wrote, "I gave the request the heaviest thumbs down I've ever given. Thanks, but no thanks, Mia. I'm not looking to wake up with a vacancy between my legs." Because he was like scared, you know, like Frank Sinatra was very mobbed up or whatever.
Gangster.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, there's the simple fact that she, as a working actress, adopted all those kids.
Yeah. And that three of them committed suicide.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Three of them.
Jesus.
And then one of them died of AIDS, right?
Yeah.
Like, was it...
Maybe
like
it was two and one died of AIDS, but I'm not... We need a fact check on that. Regardless.
Yeah.
Too many.
That's... Yeah, it's insane.
You get one. One of your kids gets to kill themselves.
One of them gets to, And not only were these kids from kind of like traumatized areas of the globe, like she adopted like several Vietnamese kids, several kids from Africa, they were also, a lot of them were like developmentally challenged or like physically challenged.
Right. There's a Moses describes her in his essay, which of course is all, no one really knows and is all speculative, but he describes her locking like a paraplegic child in a shed.
Okay. Yeah.
And her being this extremely tyrannical, very very abusive, and that the Pharaoh family in general has like a very dark, sinister
her dad past. Was an alcoholic, right? I think he may have killed himself too. But the thing is, like, whether or not, like, we can't ever substantiate in retrospect any of these details coming from Dylan or coming from Moses. And, like, you know, as it turns out, there was an inquest at the time that found that Woody Allen had not molested this child.
There was two.
Okay, yeah.
There were two, like, investigations.
Yeah.
That found that it was improbable.
And right.
It lacked the evidence to convict him. Not that, like, rapists and molesters aren't found innocent every day, but...
Yeah. I mean, you know, it could be, you know, it could go either way. But
a point that Moses makes, too, is that oftentimes child pedophilia and child molestation is like a compulsion.
Right.
And that if Woody was a molester, that this is something that surely would surface in his life at another point, and that this was literally the only instance that anyone has ever spoken out about of him like having misconduct.
Well, yeah. And, you know, to that point, I completely believe that Mia Farrow is capable of coaching somebody to suit her ends. But to speak to that point, it's like, okay, Woody Allen has not only publicly absconded with Mia Farrow's teenage daughter, but he's made an entire career, as we've said before, about sort of exploring, if you want to be generous about it, or fetishizing, if you want to be not so charitable, kind of his proclivities for underage girls. But the trick is that all of that artistic production, all of his sort of known sexual activity has been limited to girls of a certain age, meaning that they were post-pubertal, and we were talking about a 7-year-old child. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing that sort of...
And in my view, it's something that Mia Farrow has completely weaponized against him. And that is like a legitimate thing to make art about.
Yeah. Yeah. So just for the fact check, two suicides, an overdose and a shot in the head. One shot himself in the head, and then the AIDS death, who also had a longtime addiction problem.
Sure.
Yeah. And it's like, it seems this is a distinction, like the post and pre-pubertal thing. And this is a distinction that's like consistently lost and kind of the alarmist U.S. media. And I'm not saying
it's
that.
True.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, somebody
hebephilia.
Yeah. And I'm sure I guarantee you somebody on Twitter will be like, rape apologist Anna Kachian says it's okay to finger bang teenage girls. And I'm not saying that at all, but that if you are going to accuse Woody Allen of molestation, it seems fairly inconsistent that it would come from, that he would, you know, home in on that age group in particular.
Right.
And it seems fairly consistent with what we know about Mia Farrow's behavior, which is like weaponizing children, that she would be capable of coaching this completely vulnerable young child.
Great point.
And, you know, I think, like, Mia Farrow isn't stupid. She also had...
No, she's deeply diabolical.
Yeah, and she must have known that part of her appeal to Woody Allen was that she...
Her waifish.
Yeah, she looked like an underage child.
Right. And that our culture completely fetishizes children to begin with.
Yeah.
That he is merely like a man of his times in that regard.
Yeah, and I have to feel like Mia Farrow's crusade, whether or not Woody Allen is guilty of the crimes that she says he is, I have to feel like her crusade against him has to do a lot with the fact that she has really ultimately nothing to do with him. She's just angry that she can't be that like sexy underage teen anymore.
People love very dark. I mean, very dark. Something I certainly have concerns about, but people really, they love to draw like a false equivalence between his alleged molestation of Dylan with his relationship with Soon Yi.
Yeah.
Whereas in my view, it has always seemed like both Woody and Soon Yi are victims of Mia.
Yeah.
And that like, even though their relationship is a little bit sick, it's like it comes more out of like a trauma bonding between them.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was like a claim that Moses made in this piece where he talked about how, Soon Yi, because she was more kind of temperamental and difficult.
Yeah, she was a classic scapegoat for her mother.
Was kind of like Mia Farrow's punching bag. And there's also like all the rumors that like Soon Yi was developmentally challenged or had some sort of like autism or something, which is untrue. Well, she's not mentally challenged in any way.
No, but she could be like a spectrum. That wouldn't.
Yeah, but it's always been a weird thing for me. It's always been weird for me that like say somebody like Angelina Jolie went to all these different locales as an American woman went to all these different locales and picked out the most beautiful child at the orphanage who happened to have her large eyes and pouty lips. Mm-hmm. It always creeped me out that Mia Farrow, as a woman who was extremely busy and a career woman, chose these children that demanded a lot of special needs and care.
We're already treading into some uncomfortable territory perhaps, but I think that you put it very well that there have been investigations into Woody Allen's conduct, and I mean literally none into Mia's, but knowing what we know that she's not like a reliable narrator and probably a brainwasher of children. Yeah. And that in my estimation Woody Allen is innocent, but
I like I'm how also you say a big, that in I'm your sexy bedroom voice.
But I'm also, you know, a fan of his, and it's complicated and no one really knows. I'll say again as a formal disclaimer, we certainly don't have the answers. We just have a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the episode.
Yeah.
And Mia Farrow, we'll see you in hell.
See you in hell, you bitch.